Let's talk to interesting people. Let's talk about the process of seeing things differently. Let's talk about the craft of molding truth and fiction together to arrive at something new and exciting. And let's have fun while doing it. Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast.
Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast, the place where we dive deep into the minds of incredibly talented and creative individuals and try to unravel the mysteries behind their inspirations. I'm your host, Patrick Boggs, and joining me on this fantastic journey tonight is the uncanny Norbert Yates. How's it going tonight, Norbert?
I think I'm going to make it.
That's always a plus when you think you're going to make it. We've got a great guest tonight. Our guest tonight is a writer with 8 novels under his belt, 1 co-written, a collection of novellas. He's also a blues guitarist hailing from Colorado. Please welcome Brian Kaufman to the show. How's it going tonight, Brian?
Going great. Thank you.
I'm really glad that you decided to come on the show. We are very interested in hearing what you have to say. I was reading up on you a little bit. I know that you are a blues guitarist, but I also read that you have spent a little time in some heavy metal bands.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I got invited to a band because I could play bass. For heavy metal, that means learning 4 or 5 notes and thumping.
Right.
And I did that for a couple of years, and it was a lot of fun. And about 3 or 4 years ago, my family asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I said a guitar. I wanted to teach myself. And it's been blues. That's all I've tried to work on. And all those talented blues players out there have nothing to worry about.
I did a little lurking on your Facebook site, and I seen a picture of the Winter Brothers and Johnny and Edgar.
Edgar.
And I was growing up, I was a huge Edgar Winter fan. And then when I got older, I became a very big Johnny fan because I got more used to the blues. And I got to see Johnny in concert, and it was phenomenal. The man was a master. Not just blues, every instrument he played. Yeah.
I saw Edgar in concert. He did a gas stop in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Wow.
And they sold 40 tickets. So to tell you I had the best seats you could possibly imagine, you'd understand. And he had people standing up on stage with him while he was playing. He was so cool. Such a cool guy. And that was an amazing night.
Oh, man. That would have been awesome. When we seen Johnny, one thing I got from that was, and I'm this is what you just said, but sums it up too. I don't think Johnny would have cared if there were 5 people in the audience. I was just happy to be there when the magic was happening.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's very cool. All right. I'll quit reminiscing about old music that I love. In your bio, it said something about you always thought you were going to be a writer, but you got to a certain place where you had never written. And then you just said, I'm going to do this. And then you went to school. And I think that's amazing. It sounds like exactly what you did with the guitar.
Except I'm a better writer. When I was 12, I decided that if the baseball career center fielder for the Yankees didn't pan out, I would be a writer. And then there was me here, and being a writer over here, and in between was a lot of beer. I talked about writing, and then
been there.
My wife, bless her heart, said, well, when are you going to actually write? Because we talk about it a lot. And I was like, that's that. So I got to work, and I've been writing ever since.
I'm always interested in how people think about writing, because I think of people that take a legal pad and they write out their story on a legal pad. Some people are at a typewriter. Some people, I think nowadays, I'm pretty sure they record into an audio recorder and then it gets transcribed. To me, almost like the method of doing it, I wonder if it affects how you think about being a writer, because I think of, I'm more in the illustration realm. Like when you oil paint, that's a different thing than drawing. That's a different thing than inking. And I don't know if the tools affect how you think about crafting stories or writing.
For me, my first novel, I wrote on a yellow legal pad. And when I say I did cut and paste, I literally cut sentences out and taped them somewhere else. Then I had somebody with a computer, which I sure didn't back then, type it out for me. She printed it. I went through and made a single pass, changing this and changing that. And then she made the corrections and printed off my finished deal. Now I work on a laptop, and I'm not kidding when I tell you I'll do a minimum of 15 revisions on something I send out. Minimal. So what I think of it now, because of the ability of the tool, I think it just goes on and on. I keep revising and revising until I open it up, look at it and go, wow, this is really good. And then I'm done. And then as soon as it's published, I find something wrong.
Do you feel like the way that you wrote, when your method changed, do you think your writing style changed?
I think it did. I think I use pen to paper still for poetry. I still write poetry. And my method for writing poems is to throw down lines and phrases, and then I'm tying them into something and I look for threads. So that's different than what I'm doing with other. But I've gotten used to the laptop, but I'm short shrifting the rest of what I do. I live in the mountains. I walk probably 2 hours a day on mountain roads because you got to stay in shape. And so when I'm out there, it's me and my dog, and I'm thinking about my stories, and I'm plotting scenes in my head, and I play them and replay them. And there are scenes where I replayed the end scene of my Civil War novel probably 200 times in my head until I knew exactly what everything was happening. Then when I sit down at the laptop, I just draw on my memory of how things looked in the scene as I imagined it. I tell myself that's a way of writing in a cinematic style so that if anybody ever wants to give me $1 million for a screenplay, they can. I won't have to turn them down.
I was just thinking about things that when I have ideas in my head, and sometimes when I put them on paper, they stay somewhat amazing, and sometimes they're not amazing at all. Or if I talk about it, I'm like, I got this idea, and I say, Pat and I will talk about something, and it'll be like, man, this sounded so much better in my head. But when I verbalize it or I visualize it, I'm like, it's not quite the same. I don't know if you've had that experience, or is most of the time it when you're walking the dog and it's amazing in your head, and then when you write it down, it's still amazing.
Sometimes it's still amazing. I wrote a blog for the writers group up here, Northern Colorado Writers, on all of the novels that I quit. I wrote, and I, in general, it's the same thing. I write it and then I go, this isn't like I had in my head. This is awful. And can this be repaired? I had one where I wrote the entire novel twice.
Oh, wow.
And after the second time, second completely different novel, but it's the same novel, it sucked. I said, I'm not going to be able to fix this. And it just didn't come out the way I imagined. It happens.
I can be stubborn. And stubbornness is both a virtue and a weakness. Being stubborn, trying to make something work, can help you in places when you need it. But it can also be a problem when you don't want to give up on something because it's just part of your DNA. And I was wondering, you said you finally gave up on it because it didn't work. I assume you're like me in that sense, that you don't want to give it up. How did you make that determination? Oh boy, this just isn't going to happen.
I don't have a hard and fast answer for you. I've quit novels after two chapters, and I wrote that one book twice. I don't know what the tipping point is. I don't know when the switch gets thrown. When I write about stuff that I obsess about, if the obsession's gone, that's a clue. That's as close as I could come to telling you.
I'm sure you have a lot of story ideas. And when you choose to do that, I always want to know, why are you choosing? Is it, like you said, it's the thing that I'm obsessing about the most right now? But I also was wondering, too, have you ever put off writing a book because you think, at this point, I don't have the chops to do it.
Oh my God, that's almost word for word how I explained it to my wife. My baseball novel, I started 15 years ago, or 15 years before it was published. I started and stopped it, and I'd say this is no good. But I knew that I could make it work eventually. I just didn't have the chops. I really didn't. And when I actually finished it, I was so excited because it was exactly what I wanted. But 15 years.
Wow.
And that's not even my record. The Civil War novel took me 20 years. I wrote so many opening chapters that sucked. I can't even tell you. And then I go in there and I go, I don't have the ability to write this. Civil War historians are going to read this and go, this guy's writing costume drama. Get out of here. And it took me a long time to figure out how to do what I wanted to do with it and make it authentic. Yeah, I didn't have the chops.
Wow.
And now that I have some chops, I have no energy.
That's how that works.
The cruelness of life.
So one of the things that we like to talk about is cross-genre or discipline kind of ideas in creativity and art. And one of the things that I think about a lot, especially in art and music, it really is easy to discern, is I break things up into two things. One is raw creativity, and the other is execution. And typically, people are on a slider on those things. There are some people that are off the charts on the creative side. Some people are off the charts on the execution side. And most of us fit in the middle, sir, and we may be stronger on one side or the other. And I wonder if you can think about that in the same way with writing. Would that be manifest itself in creative premises and character, and then the execution would be in the writing itself and the details of the character and how they interplay? I just wonder if there's some sort of analogy that we can make with writing that you can easily make in music and art.
I know that the novel I co-wrote, my co-writing partner was the creative wild guy and I was the execution guy, that we were a terrific pair for that. It was a one-time thing. I'll never do it again, but it was really excellent. He's that way. As far as my own writing for myself, I used to be an idea guy, and now I'm a character guy, and it's switched. And character is more execution. It is a ton of planning, a ton of understanding. And when I write in different genres, I need to research the genre just to try and figure out where reader expectations are coming from. For example, the novel I just finished is a noir novel. Noir has these amazing things about it that people will expect. I went through and read tons of books, maybe 100. And then I watched movies and I just made notes, all these crazy notes of what I need to do. For example, the movies, all the directors were European expats after World War II, and they're all shattered. They're all disillusioned. And there's a feeling for that. And some of the cinematic tricks they use, their whole deal is to keep the viewer off balance. So you see the Dutch angle all the time. You see the stark shadows. It's Dr. Caligari's cabinet, the bastard child of that.
Gotcha.
And people are staged in a room. When you have three people in a scene, they're staged wrong. It's against expectation. Even the time is subverted. You'll have a guy rolling along, and then suddenly somebody from the past throws a wrench into everything. I think the classic is The Movie Out of the Past. You see those things, and they're just terrific. Can you translate that? Urban settings, nighttime settings, rain. They're subverting the nature instead of life, death, life, the cycle. It's just death and decay, and the thing you can know about the decay is it's going to get worse. Philosophically, I analyze them. Noir, very much like horror, is on this nexus between existentialism and nihilism, and everybody loses. And so if you understand some of those expectations, really analyze what you're going to do, and then bring these things into the characters. And that's a lot of fun. And then, of course, you can't just follow the tracks of the other guys. You got to come up with something on your own. So, for example, the noir anti-hero, he has three characteristics. He's narcissistic, he's sociopathic, and he's Machiavellian. And so I'm doing near future dystopian noir, where I suspect that those three negative characteristics will be survival traits. So that's one of the hooks I'm using. They use voiceover in a lot of the noir movies. The reason they do is the same reason Shakespeare tells you that Romeo and Juliet are dead in the beginning of the play. It's already happened. That's why they're star-crossed lovers. It's happened.
Right.
It can't be stopped. And the voiceover, how do I do that? In my book, I have its first person present, but on occasion, the narrator who's doing this, who's him, 3 years later, my character 3 years later, and he'll do an aside, us the fourth wall. So there's this big voice and this little voice, and the big voice is the authority. And he'll occasionally break in to make fun of himself in the past. And so those are my tricks for making the thing interesting and different, so I'm not retreading Philip Marlowe.
What? Now, what book is that? Is that A Shadow
It
Melody?
Isn't out yet.
Not
it
even
isn't out.
Out
yet.
Okay.
No, the biggest writers' conference in America is Killer Nashville. It's a crime conference.
Really?
And I entered it in the Clayton Prize, which is their unpublished, and I was a finalist.
Nice.
And so I think it's got something I can use, and I'm finishing it now.
It sounds really interesting. I want to go back just for a second, and I just love the idea. First, I've got to say, you mentioned one of my favorite movies ever, Out of the Past with Robert Mitchum, is by far one of my favorite films. Like, textbook noir. Kirk Douglas is amazing as well. I found your Sins in Blue Book, so that looks very interesting. And I just was looking through this, and the first review on the book, I'm just going to read you the first couple lines. It says, "This book feels like the Delta Blues bled onto the paper and saturated every page. There's no wasted language, each word chosen with purpose." That, to me, makes me want to read this book, that review right there. And the more I've read about it, the back, like what's going on in the book, it's very interesting. I'm assuming that came from your love of blues, but is this a true story or is this from Brian Kaufman's imagination?
It's from my imagination. The recordings that Alan Rankin did when he ran through the South, what I'm doing is hypothesizing that going through all that 10,000 discs, they find one recorded in 1932, and listening to it, you would say that's the guy who invented rock and roll.
Wow.
This kid from Pittsburgh heads to Fort Collins, Colorado, where this blues player is now working as a janitor in a hotel. And he says, "We're going to be stars together. We'll get you the Newport Jazz Festival. Sun House played the year before. We'll get you up there. You're going to be famous because you invented rock and roll."
Wow.
And of course, it plays out. That's one of my two favorite books I've written. I just love the thing. And it's just labor of love. That's all it is. And of course, I wanted to have the chapters headed by quotes from blues lyrics, but man, trying to buy rights or pay for the rights for just even short quotes of lyrics is just horrible. So I thought I'll just head the chapters with my lyrics as my character, my blues character player. So I just put in some of the lines from my songs, which are really funny. So
now I even more want to read this book. Here's another thing I noticed, just anybody that's looking to read Brian, you've got a lot of these on Kindle Unlimited. That's actually pretty cool. If you're a reader, that is very cool.
Easy to get one of my books.
Yeah. So while we're talking about your books, I wanted to mention, I'm noticing that you don't have a genre. If I'm reading a Brian Kaufman book, I'm reading all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
From horror to historical and I'm a horror fan. And I see this book called The Wretched Walls. And I don't think there's been a better Lovecraft title than that. Did he inspire that at all? That name itself is very Lovecraftian. The book doesn't necessarily sound like it, but...
No, it's pretty much a ghost story. It came out of a discussion with a fellow horror enthusiast who said, ghosts can't really hurt you. And I thought, how could they? And then the story came to me in a third of a beer. So, that one actually got the Horror Novel Review gave that, put that in their top 10 of the year, 2015. That's one of the novellas in my collection of novellas, which is Mary King's Plague and Other Tales of Woe.
Yeah, great title. I love that. I really like your titles. The Fat Lady's Low Sad Song, your baseball novel, that's a fantastic name. I just think that you've done a great job in naming your works. When I was a kid, I would look at an album cover, even if I didn't know the band or if I thought the album cover was cool, 9 times out of 10, I was going to buy it because
me,
you know,
too.
What this looks like, it's got to be cool inside. And what this sounds like, yeah. So,
Molly Hatchet, Dark Kingdom by Frank Frazetta. The question I had is something that I saw Elon Musk post on X probably a month ago or maybe two. He said the Iliad was better listened to as it was originally crafted by Homer than it was to read as a book. And I was wondering, as we are entering a new world of audiobooks and people consuming more and more books by listening to them, does that influence your writing or your thinking about telling a story?
Influences my process. I say toward the end, I do a read aloud, which means you're talking 300 pages, you're reading out loud to yourself. First of all, I have to wait until my wife's away. Get self-conscious. But I read the whole thing out loud because you hear things differently. And also, I'd like a little bit of music in the prose. I really would. It's just something that I like. The persistent echo. Kirk has said I had the voice of a poet. And I'm like, wow, thank you. Best thing you could have said. Best thing you could have said. So I I'm an audiobook fan. I have an hour commute each way, and audiobooks are my saving grace. So
the thing about an audiobook, which is a little bit different, and I have to say that, and I've heard other people say it too, but it's the reader. I'm listening to a book right now called Between Two Fires, and the guy that's reading the book is just phenomenal, where he uses his voice to make different voices, and you get lost, and you don't even realize it. Have you ever done your own audio for your audiobooks?
I couldn't do it. Of my books, 4 of them have been made into audiobooks. One really stands out, and that's The Shadow Melody, and that Rita did voices. He read the way I wrote it. I'm kind of one of those, I get obsessive about punctuation, and the reason is I think of it as sound direction. And I'm thinking, how is this going to get read by an audiobook guy? Just like, how is the images going to strike a director who's considering a movie? It's similar. But the narrators are super. I read J.K. Rowling does, under the name Robert Galbraith, does Corman Strike series. And it's Private Eye. And the guy who reads for that is unbelievable. He's so good. I don't bother looking at the books because the audio is going to be better. It's the narrator's very important.
There are so many that they've made the book come to life for me. Now do me a favor, tell me about A Persistent Echo. Tell me about that book. It sounds very interesting.
The background is, and it's a true background, 1897, there were about 400 reported sightings of the UFO. And this is years before the Wright brothers flew. That's just the historical background. And it has a place in the theme. It's thematically consistent. The story's about an elderly man who used to be an adventurer, explorer, and he's read about these UFO sightings, and he takes a train down to Texas, Rome, Texas, which is where some of the sightings are. And he's wanting one last adventure. And he knows the town because that's where his wife died 15 years earlier. She died of cancer. The story, though, isn't all about UFOs. And I'd give my best guess of what I think really happened in the book. But the story is also about 15 years earlier, when his wife was dying, there was a murder and then a lynching. And the repercussions of that for the characters who are still in town, who do not recognize him, that makes it for an interesting mystery. And then there's a big reveal, which I cannot spoil. I would just say that it's all thematic driven. Persistent Echo is a title that is from the dialogue in the book. His companion is saying that history repeats itself. And he says, it may not repeat itself exactly, but there's definitely a persistent echo. And 1897 is an interesting time. There was a Chinese pandemic. 12 million people died. There was a world power who was attacking a small country, not Russia and Ukraine. It was Spain and Cuba. Mm. And the newspapers were beating the drums for war. The motivation probably had more to do with imperialistic tendencies. We had our eyes on the Philippines. And so that war happened in 1898. There was an astounding amount of arrogance in the medical community. And one of the atrocities that the book is about happens because no one questioned. And they had free reign.
That's a theme that's been persistent through time. This is not the only instance of that.
Yeah. And the newspapers, of course, and their version of what news is. For example, there's an account in the story, and I do it pretty much verbatim from what the real guy did. It was a judge, and he claimed to have encountered the UFO and talked to the crew, and that the crew told him they were from North Pole Land. And he pawned this off as news. And got himself a little attention and probably had a little arrogant fun at the expense of the little people. So there's so many persistent things. Now, what that breaks down to is that, why does it repeat? Why is this echo? And what I'm trying to explain is that people make the same mistakes because human nature doesn't change that much. And so certain things repeat. And for example, the battle against bigotry, which is what the book's really about, has to happen every generation. It's going to happen again and again. And what I wanted to show was, even in this rural setting, very pastoral, it's the same modern problems we have now. They're almost exactly the same. I was struck with how stunningly similar it was. And then I give a bit of a prescriptive idea. It's a very satisfying, thematically, a very satisfying novel for me.
As individuals, learning is cyclic. So we pick it up every time we hear it again and it's reinforced. But it doesn't seem as a society that our learning is cyclic. You know what I'm saying? It just seems like we forget everything. And it's weird.
Everything. Makes it easier for the repeat.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Oh, it sounds great. I really like that. There's a lot going on in that story. And I think I see what you're saying about how you're now more of a character person when you write.
One of the things you was talking about with the persistent echo that I found interesting, you was talking about how things repeat in terms of bigotry and that sort of thing. It never really leaves us. It just changes clothes. I find it interesting, like people that really know history, they can really tell you how things are going to shake out in present day in terms of how the different ethnic persuasions of people in the historical context of different things happening overseas. They can go, back in this has been a reoccurring thing. And every once in a while, when I listen to people like that, it almost depresses me. It's, man, we just don't seem to be, everybody says, oh, we're making progress as a society. And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think so. Do you find it sometimes if you get too close to that, it becomes heavy emotionally and weighs on you when you're writing those kind of books? Or do you like have to have palate cleansers, or how do you navigate that?
My protagonist is dying of cancer. When I say he's going for a last adventure, he knows it's his last adventure. In the end, there's a conflict and a resolution, and it could be viewed positively, although it's pretty clear to him that this sort of thing will happen again and again. And he even expresses to his friend that this is depressing, and you can see what's coming. And he feels he didn't do anything with his life because he didn't stop anything. And it's going to happen again. And the response was, you lived a good life. His friend tells him, basically, you lived a good life. And you did what you could. And now you got to stop worrying about it because it's our turn to battle this. This is our battle now. And so I guess there's an uplifting sort of moment with that, with realizing he doesn't have to fix the future. He did enough to try and battle in the present.
Very interesting.
My last question for you tonight is something that you had written of novellas. And one of the things is we've talked to different people, and sometimes you have the novel and people can wrap their minds around that, and a short story, and a lot of authors can wrap their minds around that. But novellas for some is like in this nether world that they have, some authors have trouble with. And I wondered if you had any expertise in terms of how to navigate those waters.
Novella is very much like a novel, only lower scope, usually a narrower scope, less characters. So you're handling just a couple of characters. You don't have to keep things juggling. Less stopping and smelling the roses. And it's actually got to move. I use novellas for horror. And I do it for two reasons. When I read Stephen King, I may get to a good scary spot, beginning of Salem's Lot, for example. Then I put the book down and I pick it up again the next day. But in the meantime, I got the mail and there are bills in there I can't pay. So you lose that steam. A novella is short enough that people can actually buzz it in a single night and they don't disrupt the fictive dream. The second reason I like it is because a novella might be 120, 130 pages long. That's roughly equivalent to a script. For horror, most of the modern horror enthusiasts have encountered horror through movies, not through books. And so when they read a novella, it's got the same beats as a movie. So I think it works better for that. And so that's what I use it for.
I'd never thought about that, but that is awesome. I've got a friend and she's writing a novella in parts on Amazon, has a thing called Vella, which is a serial. Have you ever thought about doing that or?
No, there are some, it takes me so long to write and I have to have something good and finished. I've never had a series before because the thought of having deadlines paralyzes me. I like to have the stuff done before I do it. And having the serial, that's a special kind of writing that's challenging. You have to end in such a way each chapter. Instead of like when I end a chapter, I might have a character with a kicker line. But you've got to have a hook. You got to drag the people along. That's Dwight Swain stuff. You got to keep the timelines going and you've got to be able to pull people into the next episode. Because if they didn't like episode 5, they won't get number 6.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting idea to me. I mentioned it before, but I'm a fan of Lovecraft. He wrote Herbert West, Reanimator, that was serialized. He hated doing the serial. It's just exactly for what you said.
Yeah, I
believe.
He did it
because he was broke. That's why he did it.
Good reason.
So, Brian, you've got a book coming out. soon, right? Did you say just finished one, or is it going to be a while?
I finished it, but I don't have a publisher yet.
Oh,
I'm going to shop this one and try and get a bigger house and
gotcha.
See what's possible. And I've never had an agent. I'm going to look for one.
There
the agent will probably tell me to stop hopping genres. So it won't work out long term.
It's interesting. I look at your books and I'm looking at them interesting for different reasons. So I think that quality is a theme. You know what I mean? So I've read a lot of Stephen King stuff and it's not all horror. So of course it's Stephen King. So it's the master. But what is in the future for Brian? I know you're doing that book. Any other books in mind? Any novellas coming up? Any conferences you're going to?
I am going to go to the Killer Nashville conference this summer. I have a lot of other conferences, but I am appearing as a guest or a vendor. I have multiple projects going at once. This is the ADD thing. When I was younger, I bankrupted spectacularly. And we did a Chapter 13, which you pay monthly to the trustee. And so I was working 100 hours a week. Every Saturday, I'd be off at 3 a.m. and would not have to be back to work till Sunday night at 7 p.m. So that was my night off. I would get home and I would cook. I'd watch a movie. I'd write. I'd listen to music. I did all these things. You can't do one thing. And that stuck with me for the rest of my life. I don't just do one thing. So I have a horror novel that I'm working on. I have another character-driven book club-style book. I think they call that upmarket now. And I'm working on it. I'm trying to help a friend edit his wildly imaginative and spottily written book. So I'm doing editing, too.
Wow.
And then I have two other ideas. So it's just, I need to retire so I can do work more.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Brian, this has been a lot of fun talking to you tonight, and I'm just really looking forward to reading a couple of these books. I think that other people that listen to this podcast are going to be as intrigued as I am about this stuff. For some ideas in Persistent Echo that I felt the ideas behind them were very, very cool. I have to say that I think part of it is because I'm getting older. I'm thinking about my life and the end of it. I know that comes up. But you mentioned some things in Persistent Echo that almost made me feel better about getting older and facing the inevitable. That's a good thing. I know it sounds a little morbid when I say it out loud.
No, now you're catching the drift of where I was when I wrote it. That's part of what was going on.
Oh, very good. Brian, we can find your books on Amazon. I know that. Where else do you have a website or?
Kaufman, all one string, author Brian Kaufman. com.
Great.
And from there are links to all of my books. There's some blog articles, a few, very few pictures. And I think, yeah, that's a good place. And also I'm on Facebook, just Brian. You can find me at author Brian Kaufman on Facebook, or just friend me as Brian Kaufman. I think I still have space on there. That's one of with my Facebook page, I'll do like, when I wrote my Civil War novel, I just added a bunch of Civil War reenactors. And when I did this book, I added some UFO enthusiasts. It's fun. Facebook's just a kick.
Absolutely. We wish you nothing but luck. It's been a blast talking tonight. But
questions were really good. They were really perceptive. And I really like being able to have question with substance. That's cool.
Awesome. We are, I hate to call myself a creative, but Norbert is just an amazing creative, and we genuinely want to know. These are the questions that we really want to know about. I'm so happy that we get people on that will talk in depth on this stuff. So I really appreciate that.
Super pleasurable. I really enjoyed this.
Great. And awesome. As well as we, I'm sure I did.
Yeah. It's always nice when people think through their answers and try to have a good conversation. Because sometimes people come on and they just want to talk about what they want to talk about. And you ask them a question and they go into what they want to talk about.
Yeah. It's,
But we don't have as much of that as anymore. We've had some really fantastic guests, and you being one of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank absolutely. You.
Yeah, so we'll have to keep in touch and make sure that we know what Brian's doing in the future. Maybe have you back
hey,
on.
Hey, guys, I can tell you this. I'm going to email you and ask you for addresses, and I'm going to send you some books.
Oh, so, that's awesome. Nice. That's
awesome.
And I wasn't going to say this on the air, but I'm going to send you a blues CD. It rings a lot true to what your book's about, honestly. It's nuts about this guy who had, he played with Ike Turner's band, and he did all this. He was a guitar blues band and basically just was right on the edge of making it, and then it just didn't work out, and he ended up in this area in the 70s and got together with some just regular players, blues lovers, but players, and they put an album out. That album got lost, and then a friend of ours who was an audio engineer, he got the files again, and they digitized them, and I did the artwork for the album, and we put it out. So I'm going to send
you
that.
Oh, that's really intriguing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We'll trade stuff then.
Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great. That's fantastic, Brian. And yeah, I'll send you, send me your address, and that'll be right straight to you. So sounds
very
good.
Fine.
All right.
Forward to reading your stuff.
Absolutely.
I get some nice copies from my publisher, so it's fun for me to give them away, some of them. And it's just, and from talking to you guys, I have an idea what I want to send you. So,
oh, fantastic.
That'll be fun.
That's awesome. I really appreciate that. We're going to let you go, or we'll be talking okay. here all night, but it's been great. And definitely keep in touch, and we'll talk again.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
really
Brian.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Same here.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the True Fiction Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please visit us at Facebook. You can also leave us a review on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. Until next time, stay true and stay creative. Hey, you're too late.